We'll be to Romans 12 in a few minutes. Glad you're with us. And so thankful to see such a good number on Sunday morning. We hope if you have the opportunity, you'll be with us tonight at 6:30. We plan on coming back together here at this place and studying the life of Christ. We're going through His life chronologically, seeing all the things that He went through, looking at His teachings. It's been very, very encouraging, and very uplifting for me, and I think you'll find it very beneficial for you as well. So please, if you have a chance, please be with us. For our visitors, we are very glad that you're here. We ask that you fill out one of the visitor cards in front of you. When the plate is passed later, we don't expect you to put any money in it. That is the responsibility of the saints who make up this local church. We would like to have a visitor card to have a record of your attendance. So if you will, please do that. But don't feel obligated to give later on. That's the responsibilities of the saints who meet here. We're just very, very thankful that you've come to be with us this morning. But you can see what I want to talk about this morning is Christians under pressure. Specifically the pressures, the various pressures that Satan puts on Christians. Now, we're not going to look at every one of them there. Certainly, we could spend all day naming the different ways that Satan puts Christians under pressure. But we are going to look at a few. In this life, we understand we deal with a lot of different kinds. We deal with pressures at work. For those who are in school, you deal all kinds of pressures there from your peers. We deal with financial troubles. We deal with health troubles. All of these things are pressures on us. And pressure is the exertion of force upon a surface by an object, fluid, etc., in contact with it. In other words, it's a constant push. It's a constant influence being pressed upon something else. In spiritual things, it's no different. We're constantly pressured by Satan to sin against God. So, he loves to put pressure on us, Satan does. He wants us to get farther and farther away from God. He wants us to not look to Him. We're given a warning. Peter gives this warning in 1 Peter 5:8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Just look at the description given there. That's what Satan wants. He is walking around. He's looking for opportunities. And if we let him, he will eat us alive. So be on guard. Be sober. Our minds are to be totally clear. We're to be focused on what we're doing. Be vigilant. Be watchful. Because that enemy is very real. He's very busy. So let's look at some different ways, some different pressures that Satan puts on Christians this morning. He pressures us to conform to the world around us. Just act like everybody else. That is what he wants. There are very few people in this world who want to be outcasts. There are some who like that. But most of us, I would venture to guess, most of us want to be accepted by others. None of us want to be seen as a weirdo or an outcast. Just, we like the idea of being accepted among other people. This is especially true when we're young. It's one of those things where young people are trying to find out who they are, who they want to be, and they desperately want to be accepted. But this affects all of us. All of us do want that. So Satan tells us, you know how you could do that? Just act like everybody else. Just conform and be like everybody else. Then they'll love you. They'll love you if you act like them. So women often today are pressured to dress immodestly because many other women dress immodestly. And if you want the style of the time, and if you want the popular clothes, then there's the temptation to be like everyone else and dress immodestly. Men are often pressured to speak with profanity. This is one of those things. I don't know a man alive who wants to be seen as weak. I don't know any. We want to be strong. We want to be seen as strong and sturdy and dependable. And you watch TV and you watch movies, how are tough men often depicted? With foul mouths. And so that's a temptation. That's one of those ways that we're tempted to conform. Young people, we mentioned them earlier, that desire to fit in, they're often tempted to get involved with drinking or drugs by their friends to be accepted. In that way, premarital sex is considered absolutely normal. It's just considered as, well, that's what everybody does. All of these things, Satan says, just be like everybody else. Just conform. Why wouldn't you? Everybody else does it. And God says, don't be conformed. Don't be conformed. Be transformed. Romans 12, verse 2, if you're there. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Don't be like everybody else. God made us to be a certain way. And that's not like this world acts. He made us to be pure and righteous. He expects us to do that. He knows that we can. So with those things that we talked about, don't dress immodestly, because that's not what people striving for godliness do. Don't use profanity, because the mouth of a Christian should only issue forth pure things and holy things. Don't get involved in things like social drinking or drugs, because your reputation should be one of righteousness and holiness. And don't get involved in things like premarital sex, because sex was made for the marriage bed. Hebrews 13, verse 4. Pressure to conform is real, but we don't have to get into it. You remember a couple weeks ago we talked about, in the book of Numbers, we talked about the 12 spies who were sent into Canaan. Remember, 12 are sent in, and Moses tells them, God, of course, is the one who told him to send them in. And Moses says, go in, spy out the land, see what it looks like, see if it's good, see what the people there are like, see if we can take it. And so they go in, 12 of them, and they see that the land is indeed glorious. A land truly flowing with milk and honey. But there are giants in there, and they have fortresses. The people of that land are warlike. And the spies come back, and 10 out of 12 tell the people, it's a great land, but we can't take it. It's too much for us. The people are too powerful. There are giants there. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. We can't do it. How easy would it have been for Caleb and Joshua to just conform and be like everybody else? You've got 10 spies there saying, we can't do it. You're about to look like a freak if you say something different. And we know that people tried to stone Caleb and Joshua. But what do they say? Let us go up immediately. Let us go up at once and take possession of it, for we are well able to overcome it. They didn't give in to the pressure to conform. They didn't give in to the thoughts of their peers. They did what was right, because it was right. It was God's way. Godly people don't conform to unrighteousness. They stand firm. They stand true. It's what He expects of us. Another way Satan pressures us is through dishonesty. Dishonesty is so commonly accepted today, it's almost unbelievable. It's when somebody is caught in wrongdoing, typically, what's the first thing they do? Deny, lie about it. And then when they're finally pinned down and all the evidence is there, then they start backtracking. But people lie all the time. It's like a knee-jerk reaction. Politicians often lie and are caught in it. Coaches lie all the time. I have no idea why ESPN even bothers to ask coaches questions they don't want to answer. They're just going to lie to you. They do it all the time. They lie about players. They lie about everything. Inflated footballs. I mean, it doesn't matter. They will lie to you to your face. And then when they're called on it, then they start backtracking. And it's what Satan tells us. Hey, come on, man. Everybody's dishonest. Everybody's dishonest. It's no big deal. You want to avoid taking the blame at work? Satan says, just lie about it. Just blame somebody else. You want to make a good grade on a test, but you didn't study for it? Just cheat. That's what everybody does. You don't want to report all that income on your taxes? Just be creative. Just be creative. Fudge a line here or a line there. That's the advice He gives us. And He says, it's just a little white lie. Nobody gets hurt. What does God say? He says we'd be better than that. Turn to Philippians 4. In a world that loves dishonesty and is just telling lies like it's nothing, what does God expect from His people? Philippians chapter 4. Here are the things that we're to focus on. Meditate is the word that's used there. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true. It starts out with that word. Whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And again, the first thing he says, brethren, whatever things are true. Where does lying fit in on this list? Where does dishonesty fit on this list? That's no place. And for those who would say, it's just a little white lie and nobody gets hurt, turn to Revelation 21. We'll read verse 8. We get in certain situations, and that idea of situational ethics kicks in where, well, depending on the situation, I might can lie and it'll be okay. Revelation 21, verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Which liars? All liars. It doesn't matter what color the lie is, and it doesn't matter what size the lie is. All liars will end up in Gehenna, hellfire. Now, that sure blasts the idea of nobody getting hurt, doesn't it? Because that tells me I'll get hurt. If I continue in that lifestyle and I try to justify being dishonest, I will ultimately get hurt for all eternity. This is a lie Satan tells us. Don't fall for that stuff. Dishonesty has no place in the life of a Christian. It'll cost us our souls if we don't get rid of it. Another thing that he pressures us to do is to be pleasers of men. Men pleasers. There has always been a temptation to tell people what they want to hear rather than what they need to hear. Turn to John 12. This is nothing new. We see in the days of Jesus, in John 12, there were people who heard him and they knew that what he said was true. They believed it to be true, but nevertheless, they wouldn't confess it. John 12, verse 42. Nevertheless, even among rulers, many believed in him. Speaking of Jesus. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. They did what other people wanted. They gave up truth to please other people. They said what other people wanted to hear. You know, we could have a lot more members in this congregation if we would just sacrifice a little truth. I believe we could double the number of people here if we would just do away with a little truth. Just give us 6 months and stop teaching truth. You have people crawling all over the back walls. Don't demand, Satan says. Hey, don't demand truth on marriage, divorce, and remarriage, because that drives people away. And don't be willing to withdraw from a brother or sister in sin, because that's just mean and nobody wants to do that. In fact, why don't we just not teach against sin at all, Satan says, because that way everybody will come in. Why don't you just entertain them? Why don't you just make them feel good about themselves? And then everybody will be happy. And many churches have. And they have incredible numbers to show for. But what does God say? Turn to Galatians 1. The world says, and Satan says, just make them feel good. You know, just build them. Give them a pep rally. Help them feel good about themselves. Galatians 1 verse 10. Paul writing to the saints in the region of Galatia. He says, for do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. Did you get that? Let's read the last part again. For if I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. I can't do both. I can't be a men pleaser, tell them what they want to hear, and serve Christ, because those two things don't go together. I will choose Him, or I will choose to tell others what they want to hear. It all comes down to truth. God's truth is the only thing that will save people from an eternity in hell, and I can't compromise that. John 17:17, sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. We can't tamper with that. We can't mess with His word. We have to present it as He's given it. 2 Thessalonians makes it very clear. There are some who do not love the truth. There are some who will perish because of that fact. Let's turn there. 2 Thessalonians 2. Verse 10, speaking of the coming of the lawless one. He says in verse 10, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. They didn't want the truth. They didn't love the truth. The truth was contrary to what they wanted to hear. So they rejected it. Let's not be like that. Let's be like the apostles. Turn to Acts chapter 4. Peter and John are arrested for doing what Jesus told them to do. And we see, picking up in verse 18 of Acts chapter 4. So they called them and commanded them not to speak at all or teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. It goes with the same idea that we'll see in the next chapter as well. Chapter 5, verse 29. But Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. We have to teach what God has told us to teach, Peter says. We have to live that. We can't teach anything else. We serve God rather than men. Satan pressures us to be lukewarm. You know, if we are just bent and determined to serve the Lord anyway, after all of this other stuff, then Satan says, fine. But he wants us to be as worthless as possible. Just as weak and useless as possible. And he might say things like, well, you know, you don't want people to think you're some kind of religious zealot or anything. So let's not get crazy about this Jesus following stuff. You don't have to always study. I mean, really? Three times on Sunday? And two of those times that you meet are Bible classes? Who has two Bible classes on Sunday? Who needs to study the Bible that much? That's what Satan says. Come on. I mean, there are other things you can do. You need to relax a little bit on Sunday. You don't need to do all this reading the Bible. But what does God say? 2 Timothy 2. Verse 15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. You want to please God? You want Him to be proud of you? Using that phrasing. Study His word. Know how to rightly divide the word of truth. That'll make Him pleased with you. That'll bring Him joy. Turn back one book to 1 Timothy 4. Look at verse 13. Paul encouraging Timothy until he comes. There are some things that you need to do, Timothy, until I return. He says in verse 13, till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, and to doctrine. What do you think Timothy was supposed to read? Newspaper? Some law that the Roman government had put out? What do you think he was supposed to read? What did he have? He had the Old Testament scriptures. He would have had access to them. He was to read God's Word. He also would have had the letters that Paul had written, which, as we would call, as part of our New Testament. He was to read those things. Scripture. God's Word. Those were the things he was to build himself up in until Paul returned. And so Satan says, okay, fine. But do you have to go to every service? I mean, shouldn't you get some you time? God tells us that we are stronger together. We're to come together to stir each other up to love and good works. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. We are closest to the people we spend the most time around. If you see me once or twice a month, how effective am I at stirring you up? How effective are you at stirring me up? Turn to Revelation 3. God wants servants who are on fire in their service to Him. He wants servants who put Him first. Way first. Everything else takes second place. Above family, above friends. Laodicea would not put the Lord first. The church there gets a frightening rebuke from the Lord. Revelation 3, verse 15. Speaking to Laodicea, you can see that in verse 14. He says, I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish that you were cold or hot. So then because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. You are worthless, he says. You've got some heat to you. They weren't cold. They were lukewarm. You've got some heat. You're doing some things. And Jesus says, it makes me sick. Because what that says is, how do you get lukewarm? You mix hot and cold. So it's not all hot. It's not all on fire in service to God. There's some coldness. There's some indifference there as well. Or it used to be hot, and what happened? You just let it cool for a while. It's not hot anymore. It's not active. It's not focused. We just let it cool off. And Jesus said, it makes me sick. He died so we can spend eternity with God. And we treat Him, if we're like the Laodiceans, we treat Him as though, you know, Lord, I love you. I appreciate that a lot. I got other stuff to do though. So I'll catch you on this day. And I'll pray to you here. And I'll do some things. But don't expect me to change my life for you or something. And that's what Satan tells us. Just be lukewarm. Don't get crazy. He will not take second place in our lives. But what Satan would love more than anything is to get us to just give up our faith altogether. Can you imagine the impact that it has on those around them when a Christian falls? When a Christian falls away from the Lord, it doesn't just affect them. Certainly it does affect them, but not just them. It affects family that may have been brought to the Lord by them. One of my very best friends, great song leader, great teacher, preacher, fell away. He had worked for 10 years to get his dad to obey the gospel. Finally, his father had obeyed, his father's wife had obeyed, and they were trying to learn and trying to study, and then he fell away, and they went with him. They just weren't grounded. They didn't have any root in truth. And when the son, who had shown so much faith for so many years, when he left the Lord, they went with him. Whole family affected. His children, who once had a daddy who was teaching them about the Lord and of being obedient and faithful to the Lord, he just went out, started living with somebody else, eventually got married to her. Barely sees his kids. What did that do to their faith? Their faith that was so malleable. It was being molded. And he just crushed it. See, giving up our faith doesn't just affect us. It affects those around us. The local church, too, faces a huge blow. Somebody who was once such a source of encouragement is now discouraged. And Satan gives us plenty of reasons to give it up. He says, you know, you can't live up to it anyway. Why are you trying? You can't live up to all that stuff. Just quit. You know, and if you quit, then you can do the stuff you want to. Right? And you know, you'd have a lot more friends if you would quit all that stuff. Just go back to your old ways. Have you ever been tempted to quit? You ever been tempted to leave the Lord? To go back and just stop? Imagine many of us have. And some of us said, I think I will. Demas said that. 2 Timothy 4, verse 10. We read about Demas. Paul, as he's closing that letter, says, for Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Demas had previously been mentioned as a fellow laborer in the letter to Philemon, but the things of the world called to him. He loved them more, and so he left the Lord. Paul was tempted to quit. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27, I think you can infer from that. He says, I discipline my body daily lest after I've preached to all these others, I should be disqualified. That tells me if he's disciplining his body daily, he's being tempted to stop daily. And Paul says, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to quit. I will keep myself in line. Lest after I've taught others salvation, I lose mine. I'm not going to do that, Paul says. What does God say? Satan wants us to quit. Just quit. God says, remember the crown of life that's been promised to you. The second part of verse 10 in chapter 2 of Revelation, be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. I want you to turn to Hebrews 10. The crown of life. Paul looked forward to it. He wanted it so badly. In Hebrews 10, God says, hold fast. Just hold on. Refuse to let go of it. Hebrews 10, verse 23, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. God promised this to us, and he's faithful. He'll keep his part. Just hold on. Hold fast to it. Now, when these pressures come, some things that we can remember. Satan loves to give us advice. But then keep in mind, he's a liar and the father of lies. And he's the biggest loser ever. He's already lost. He will not be able to win in any way. And what Satan wants is for me to join him in his losing. Revelation chapter 20. Here is his end. Verse 10 of Revelation 20. This is where the one who would give me all this great advice, this is where he ends up. Revelation 20, verse 10. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and false prophet are. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Why would I listen to him? That's where his advice got him, or will get him. It's where it'll get me too. You can look at Matthew 25 and see we'll end up in the same place if we listen to him. Don't listen to him. Cut him loose. James 4, verse 7 tells us if we resist the devil, he will flee. He will flee from us for a time. We can resist him. This is something that I don't know if we really understand it like we should. Satan cannot make me do anything. He can tempt me. He can give me opportunities. But I am the one who will make the decision to sin. He can't force me to sin. It's much easier for me to resist when I make God's ways my ways. When I strive to be like his son. Turn to 1 Corinthians 10. This may be the most encouraging thing for us to think about when temptations come, when pressures arise, when the problems are there. God will not allow us to be tempted above what we're able to bear. Verse 13 in 1 Corinthians 10. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common among man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, with every temptation Satan brings, God makes a way of escape. But there's a huge part there that we've got to take into consideration. I've got to take the way of escape. He will give it to me. When temptation comes, there is a way out. There always is a way out. But I've got to look for it. I've got to want to escape. And to be perfectly honest, there have been a lot of times in life where temptation came and I had a way of escape and I really didn't want to escape. Kind of like the temptation. And so I stayed there. We have to want the way of escape. It's there. We have to look for it. Let's end where we began. Turn back to 1 Peter. And we'll close with this. 1 Peter 5. I'll start in verse 6. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. We like to tell ourselves that our troubles are unique. We do. We like to think, you know, nobody's been through what I'm going through right now. That is simply not true. There are Christians who have gone through the very same things that we're going through. Some may be going through it right now. And he tells us, resist him, knowing that your brothers have gone through the same suffering. There are Christians who have gone through what I'm going through and they came out faithful. Take courage in that. That should give us strength. We don't have to fight by ourselves. We have each other to help in that. Godly people have resisted Satan's pressure in the past. They're resisting it right now. So can I. Go ahead, get your songs out.